just a couple of quick things. First of all, there was a group that saw very early on that bylaws were a beginning discussion place, you know, having these bylaws, trying to get people to focus that bylaws are extremely important, that they set the tone for everything, okay? But people weren't picking that up. What a lot of people who were listener sponsors and saw all these things happening, they didn't know what to do, and they were looking for protection for the network. They wanted to have openness and transparency. They wanted to have adherence to the mission statement. They wanted more realistic opportunities for listener sponsors to have input, because we were being totally frozen out. The old board was just saying, don't talk to us. We don't want to hear you. That's it. Okay? And then more shared power and autonomy at the local level. So that's what a lot of people were looking for, and I was also looking for reasonable rules and efficiency so that the whole operation could work, okay? Because it wasn't working anymore. I see these current bylaws as when you look at the A and B that we have right now, you've got the A and the B, and the reason we got A and B is because people feel strong enough about diversity to say we want that. Now there's another group who's also saying, first of all, understand that in bylaws there are like 100 different issues, and one of those issues, a major issue, is diversity. Now also within that are amendments, and there's a group that feels that amendments are extremely important, because no matter what you put together as a bylaw set, there's going to be problems with it, okay? There's going to be, it's not going to work correctly, or it's got to be modified here, or you got to take this out, or you got to change that, okay? But if you have a document that you can't do that to, then it's a problem for the organization. It's a problem for the foundation. And I think that's a problem when you don't have workable amendment process. And there are some people who are saying, if we don't have a workable amendment process, then we're just as unhappy as we would be with the diversity situation, because it's, you know, you can't fix it later. Because whatever's broken, you can't fix. So, as you may know, at the meeting, I brought up several amendments that I thought were important to make sure that this amendment process worked correctly. And they were a realistic ability for members to bring amendments directly to the IPNB. Now, it's going to be difficult for the listener sponsors, which I want it to be. I don't want it to be too easy, because then they'll bring too many amendments, right? But if there's something that's important, then we can get a group of people to sponsor something to bring to the PNB, the Pacifica National Board. Another thing is that all amendments should be passed by the members, eventually passed by the members. That gives members ultimate control. This is nothing unusual. This happens in many, many organizations. The members run the organization. I mean, as far as bylaws are concerned.
Tom?
Yes?
Can you also point out if it's in the bylaws or if it's not? I mean, why, you know, the way it's not.
Right. Well, the things I'm bringing up are not in the bylaws right now. And we at KPFK Lab have been talking about this. We voted in March that we wanted these things, and we have reaffirmed it 2 weeks ago. Okay? So, realistic ability of members must be ratified by members. Amendments are placed on the same consolidated ballot. If you have it at two different times, you're not going to get the people interested enough to vote for them, because amendments are pretty dry garbage, right? So you should do it at a time when people are running for positions for LAB or for the Pacifica National Board. That's very helpful. The next one is that there be some way to get that out. So the fair campaign practices thing that, you know, they wanted to get it out on the radio and all that kind of stuff, just like you would for anybody who's running for an office. And then there would be a bylaws convention within 9 to 20 months that gives a time frame where they can do it, and within 9 to 20 months, a convention of looking at the bylaws and seeing if there's any tweaking needed to be done. And for all I know, they could come up with no tweaking, or they can come with a lot of it, but that there should be something in the bylaws mandating that. Okay? Now, we voted just this 2 weeks ago that these things should be in the bylaws, and they're not. There's 3.5 pages of, you know, lots of stuff that obfuscates all much of what I'm saying here. And these are important factors. So there's a group that's saying, not only will we not vote for it if we don't have reasonable diversity, there's another group saying, we don't want to vote for it if there's no good amendment process. Okay? So there's 2 points on which, you know, a fair amount of people are saying no. And I'm very disappointed in that the National Board saw the diversity and stepped back and worked on that for 6 weeks, but they didn't work on the amendment process. Everything went stasis, you know. They kept everything the same. And I don't think that was fair, okay? And there's a group of us that feel that way. Okay? Thank you. And I did it within time.
You did? 30 seconds left.
Okay, 7 minutes starting now. Okay, well, as you've seen now, there's what I was telling you when we first started is that there are two really big classes of issues. Tom's thing about the amendment process is what I call the democracy issues. And what Dave was talking about earlier about the diversity thing, there's the diversity issues. These are the two major classes of issues. Another thing that's kind of a meta issue is the fact that the everybody is starving for elections. People are fed up with not having locally elected boards. We're fed up with not having locally or officially elected national boards. And so people are starving for elections. And the elections are perceived as being held up by the need to ratify the new bylaws. Now, in point of fact, the Berkeley lab has been elected for 2 times and could have been elected for a 3rd time, except that they decided on their own, since Carol Spooner was head of the bylaws committee, their lab decided not to have an election this year. But if they stuck to their schedule, they would have had a third, this year they would have elected their 3rd elected lab. They're doing this without bylaws. I just saw on the net today that there's a group in Washington, D.C. That wants to toss out their lab and do a bunch of stuff, and they're going to have elections with or without bylaws and all that sort of stuff. So they're moving independently on the ground to have elections. The notion about the democracy issues, those are my, I'm primarily interested in democracy issues. The amendment process, many of us who've studied it believe that it just will not work, and if we put it in, we're just going to be stuck with bad bylaws. There is a major problem. There's an open meetings loophole. The notion there is that meetings are supposed to be open and et cetera, et cetera. And it's true, they are required by law to be open, but the bylaws themselves don't say they're open. And the loophole is this. It says if there are certain reasons for having a private meeting, like a personnel issue. And the current reading of the bylaws states that if the business is predominantly about things requiring privacy, such as personnel, predominantly would mean, I think, logically 51% or more, then the entire meeting can be closed, which means that if they talk about personnel for 51%, and by the way, who's counting these percentages, then they can spend the other 49% of the time talking about other stuff and violate the open meetings thing here. Now, it's true that if you're a lawyer, you know about this, and you can sue on the basis of stuff, but the fact is the bylaws don't say that they should be open whenever they should be open. And the PNB has refused to change 2 words to do that. And so those of us on the local bylaws committee think this is just frankly BS, and that we should stand up for proper bylaws. Now, our own lab is divided on the 2 camps. Some people just are starving for bylaws and just want to have it. The fact is, our lab is in fact the swing lab. 2 other labs have said they will go for Plan B, and this lab has said we're not ready to go for. They've stated they kind of like Plan B, but they also want to have democracy put in. And so this lab is a swing lab because it's the 3rd one that has to do the ratification. And it's basically taken the position and voted, I think, when you were there, 7-3, I think you were an abstainer, that this lab would not ratify the bylaws until the amendment process was fixed. And I think it was 7-3 with 6 abstainers, and you were an abstainer. And so that's where that stands. We have the power, because we're the swing lab, the third of the five, to hold up and to hold out for fixing the democracy issues. Now, the diversity issues, those are a big thing, and I'll let Raphael and others talk about that. But the democracy issues are crucial, I believe. And
also crucial.
Also crucial, yeah, also crucial. And the LA, I believe, could go ahead and organize and just have an election. We could do it. We could take either the KPF, the Berkeley model, which had diversity requirements in it, or we could just do it without the diversity requirements to avoid the fact we're being sued. Eva has said she'll use the signal aggressively for outreach to discover and recruit good candidates and to publicize the election. I believe we can achieve diversity results with an election here, and we can have an elected lab. If we did have an elected lab, then we could then go back to the judge and say, hey, judge, we have an elected lab. We now want to seat our people on the national board. And they refuse. We'd have to ask. I can't say they will refuse, but I would bet my life they would refuse. If we did go to them and say, to the judge, say, we now have an elected lab and we're local board and we want to seat our people, and the ITNB is refusing, would you assist us? I think it would be very interesting to see what would happen there. And that's it. So I'm now done with my remarks. I'm ready to answer questions.
Okay. Why do you consider us the swing vote?
Oh.
I was going to just let Marie go first because she's the new lab member. I was addressing my remarks.
We haven't been doing Q&A up till now, but since you have 2 minutes left in your presentation, I'll convert it.
Yes.
Now, what did you say? The bylaws have no amendments?
No, there is an amendment process, but those of us which have studied it thinks that the currently written amendment process is not workable. For example, let's suppose that the National Board didn't like. Suppose the listeners came up with an amendment, and we had an amendment process. The listeners can have one election per year to have amendments. The National Board could, if it wanted to, giving adequate meetings, they could meet every day of the year and overturn the amendments. And so basically if there was something the listeners wanted to pass, we could pass it, for example, on October 1st, and then on October 2nd, or a week later after they gave a notice, so whenever the ITNB wanted to, potentially could meet every day to amend the bylaws. And that's just not right. That's a big friggin' hole. And there are other problems with it, too. And Harrison is, Harrison and I are both up on this, but go ahead. I'll take another question.
Who's IPMB? The IPMB that would overturn their listeners. Who elects them?
The National Board representatives are in fact selected by their own local board.
Yeah, who select the local board?
The listeners select the local board.
So the listeners who want amendments also are part of the election process.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. There's another problem, too, with amplification. There's a thing called the tyranny of the majority. Basically, power tends to concentrate itself. There are two appointed seats for the affiliates of stations. And those will be appointed by the National Board. And they'll be appointed, and they will be chosen, if human nature is any predictor, to be consistent with the viewpoint of the national majority. Having done that, they've now made themselves proportionately stronger.
Thank you, John.
There's also the ability of the National Board people to kick off people off the local board.
Thank you, John. Who's next? Raphael. Yeah. He has how many minutes?
7 minutes.
Seven minutes.
I agree with an awful lot of what Tom and John have had to say on the KPFK Bylaws Subcommittee. He's pretty strongly united around all of the issues on diversity and democracy. Not unanimously, but very close to it. And our lab, well, that much remains to be seen. I want to talk about diversity, though. I'm a former program director, a news director, once upon a time type thing from KPFT. And back in the day, we created a program schedule that where we broadcast in 11 languages. It is certainly one of the most diverse program schedules Pacific has ever had. It may or may not be the most. I don't know. It doesn't much matter. Certainly BAI is real diverse. And there's actually fairly strong diversity elsewhere. But if you remember, Dave was talking about the CPB and the Healthy Stations Project and the effort to mainstream programming that happened throughout the world of public radio. It had a dramatic impact. They forced stations to raise more money to get matching funds, and the result was that across the board in public radio, programming for minorities and for radical points of view was cut dramatically. People went after more PBS-style, white, upper-middle-class, upper-remobile-type audiences, and that hit Pacifica, too, and hit Pacifica in a big way. Not only was there the purging of African-American programmers almost completely at KPFK, Houston to this day, up until, I guess, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, something like that, Houston broadcasting English only in a city that's one-third Chicano and Latino. It now has 1 hour of Spanish language programming a week. There have been changes in diversity at some of the stations. There's been some improvements. And I can't remember the figure, so I'm just going to give the roughest sense that I think that the programming at KPFT, for example, is about 17% diverse at this point in a city that's roughly 50% people of color. About 17% of the programming, I think, is for people of color. And people are going, yeah, we're diverse, there's nothing to worry about, right? And here's the same thing. We're just at the point where we're starting to bring the African-American programmers back in. There's still a lot of questions yet to be resolved in terms of bringing in the Chicano and Latino programmers who were purged and differences about how we're going to handle the question of Spanish language programming and so on. WPFW has a lot of problems because even though the station has primarily people of color in command there, they run a lot of jazz and not a lot of public affairs programming. So there's a lot of questions about how are we going to generate the audience that we need to create diverse boards and create any kind of authentic democracy. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the question of how am I doing on time?
You have 3 minutes and 51 seconds.
So that's where the question of Plan A versus Plan B comes in. And I would differ with Dave Furtick slightly in that Dave characterized two extremes. One extreme, as he put it, was that those who were saying, well, you know, have elections and let it take care of itself. And the other extreme was select people, quote unquote, and put them on the boards. Those aren't extremes. That's what Plan A and Plan B is about. Just plain and simple. Okay? If you get right down to it. Plan B does have the strength that it has a required diversity in the candidate pool. Okay? But if the electorate doesn't elect a diverse board, there's no way to rectify that. There's no remedy in it. On the other hand, Plan A does have a remedy. You can add up to 5 seats for any underrepresented group, whatever group that may be. In D.C., that may be 5 white folks. White people may be underrepresented on that board. Here in L.A., since the city's about 50% Chicano and Latino, 10% African-American, roughly, and I think maybe somewhere around 15 or 20% Asian, that could break down any way you look at it. Who knows? Who knows what that's going to be? But the plans are dramatically different. And the main difference between them is one has remedies and the other doesn't have remedies. Okay? And so the question before you with respect to diversity is, do you want to have a plan that effectively says, once we create a diverse candidate pool, which Plan B will do, I'll give it credit for that.
But is that legal?
Is what? Is Plan A legal?
Is Plan A legal?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I can tell you that I've read as much of the law as I could. And the attorney that's advising the Diversity Language Committee says that this is a solid plan and should be run here. Obviously, anything can be challenged. Now, the question is, does it discriminate, quote-unquote? Does it cause harm to someone on the basis of race, class, and gender? Well, my opinion is no, because it doesn't select people to be seated based on race, class, and gender per se. It selects people to be seated based on the level of their representation. In other words, you don't seat any more Chicanos if Chicanos are represented the same way on the board as they are in the community. You don't seat any more white people if white people are represented on the board in the same way they are in the community. Mm-hmm. But whatever group is most underrepresented gets seated, regardless of their race. If there's not enough men, you add men. So regardless of race, class, and gender, you see according to a demographic scale of representation or underrepresentation. Now, obviously, that's influenced by race and gender and ethnicity and other things, but that's allowable under Bakke. Bakke lets you have race be one of the things that they consider. In fact, that's what's done today in colleges. Okay, so in my opinion, as a non-attorney, but as someone who has done their best to educate myself about it, I would say yes, it is, and that is the advice that the
There's a lot of controversy
well.
About that.
Well, there is a lot of controversy about that, but
including from Lubell.
I would rather not be interrupted, please. The long and short of it is that ultimately the questions about the law are questions that we're asking in the realm of the unknown. Because you can't say if a plan that's never been tested is legal or not. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, that's a political and moral decision. Okay? And it's a question of risk factors. And what it's worth to have diversity.
Everybody's doing real well on time.
Quasi?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't want to get too much into my minutia question. I want to just kind of talk about some of the broader stuff. Dave talked about the lawsuits, which were very important. There were a number of lawsuits that were filed. They were going through the courts. But there was also a very strong listener reaction to what was going on the air. And the listener movement became a powerful factor in the whole dynamic of the discussion about what was going to be the future of Pacifica if the corporatization of the network could be stopped. And in the process of the listener movement developing, a lot of issues around how the corporation had been misdirected by the national board came out. They all were, as several people have mentioned, basically bylaws questions. There were questions of violation of the previous or existing bylaws, manipulation of the process, secrecy, and basically the national board bypassing all the other factors in the Pacifica Foundation and the Pacifica community in terms of making its decisions. And so it was really clear that we had to have a correction, not just in terms of changing the personnel of the national board, but also basically mending those aspects or refashioning those aspects of the basic bylaws of the corporation to make sure that the same process never happened. Now, one of the reasons why the bylaws thing has been so convoluted is there are many, many different perspectives on what's involved in that. I mean, the question of diversity, for example, some people put the diversity issue aside from the democracy issues, but the diversity issue is fundamentally a democracy issue. It's one of the primary democracy issues, which is the question of, are we going to democratize the internal content and makeup of how decision-making takes place and how programming is developed within the network? Or is it going to kind of float on a continuation of exclusion that mirrors exclusion politically and otherwise of numerous communities, regardless of what their representation of the population might be? So, you know, I mean, you look at our station and the representation in terms of programming, dual language programming particularly, is nowhere near commensurate to what the population balance is in this community. And that's not because the folks running the station aren't progressive, but we're not quite progressive enough. We haven't done the things that we need to do to make sure that there's adequate representation of communities. And so that's a fundamental democracy issue. But the issues that John and several other people mentioned are really very key, and they were really what the listener movement really began to raise up as more and more people began to get involved. Well, you know, we didn't really need to just go back to the old bylaws. What we needed was, because the old, under the old bylaws, just as you all came onto the lab, because the lab as a body basically drew you on. But kind of the push to draw people on the way that we did is a result of the fact that we've had a very active, lively, and extremely democratic listener movement in this area. Now, in the different listener areas, the dynamics of that are very, very different. I mean, and one reflection of that is, for example, at KPFA in the Bay Area, where a lot of action went on. When you actually look to the details of how their setup is run, the basic concepts that have come up in the Bay Area are nowhere near as radical as they are in L.A. So, for example, their program council is basically made up of staff, people who've got programs on the air and who basically want to maintain it, and they want to make the decisions about what's going to go on the air. In L.A., that would never fly because our listener movement has really raised up some basically very radical perspectives about what kind of democracy they want to be reflected in this station and the network. And so we're starting from a different basis, and this is part of why there's so many conflicts and different perspectives. And the other issue is simply the fact that as the listener sponsors, as people who are part of the Pacifica community, we're not all coming from the same places and we're not all on the same page on many, many, many questions, maybe even most questions, except in broad strokes. So we're going through a lot of labor pains involved in the process of learning as progressive people to struggle to define more accurately what is democracy, how is that reflected in the structure and the operations of a station or a network, how does that translate into what we put in black and white in the foundation documents and processes of the corporation. That's why the bylaws issue is so critical. In my view, I think it's really important to understand that the whole discussion around the diversity question as a democracy issue is taking place in the context where there's a great social reaction, a racist reaction in our society on these questions. And so we're trying to formulate a policy on these things under a lot of external pressures. And, you know, the basic trend of things right now in our country is basically on the decline on those questions. And so it behooves us to have, in my opinion, the strongest wording and the most defensive wording that we can build into the basic structure of the corporation on those basic questions of inclusion. Because if we don't have that, and not only on inclusion, but also on the questions of, for example, will the listener sponsors be able to actually participate? In our area, the lab has taken the initiative to basically try to implement extremely democratic processes so that on all the selection committees for the administrative staff at the station, we've had listener participation in a majority on most of the committees. That hasn't been the case in many of the other stations. This is one of the reasons why we're still fighting. Our perspectives generally are to the left, I'd say, of a lot of the other localities. Not uniformly, but in some basic ways. And that's been very helpful, I think, to the perspective of Pacifica. And that's, from my perspective, part of what we need to, I hope, that our lab will help to maintain that, because there's no future guarantee that 2, 3, 4 years from now, that the whole country may have regressed to such an extent that this corporation may really, really stand out in some very basic ways if we take the right road at this time. If we don't, frankly, it's questionable, because we're still fighting over these issues about inclusion and decision-making and programming and structure and bilingualism and so forth. So.
Great.
Very good.
I like to stay more general than come to the details, because I think that's the question here. I think we need to remember, and I'm speaking to everybody in the lab, we need to remember it's not necessarily for the new members and stuff, because I don't think there is anything I can give you in 7 minutes that you should even use to determine your decision. So I think that's not right. Anyhow, as a general thing, I think one thing we need to remember, and we are all political people, that's why we get involved into this struggle. So, but one thing we need to remember is that we are politicals people with ideology, but we are involved in an institution that is part of this society, and this society in no way is anything progressive, as far as I'm concerned, or anything really democratic. So in that sense, we can only take this institution so far. We can't make it a socialist. Not that I don't want it. I wish it was like run by socialists, controlled by socialists, believe me. But I'm just saying that's what I would call a democratic institution. And by that, I don't mean democratic in the sense of having necessarily democracy, but it's within the context of this society, and it can only go so far. And the kind of, it's not like a party. It's not, and it doesn't have a specific ideology. It has a mission that's very general, and it could cover many different ideologies. In that sense, I think that's one thing that sometimes a lot of us in our discussions forget. So that's the way I address the issue, and that's why I want to pass Plan B right now. And I say why, because I think as far as the diversity is concerned, as far as the language is concerned and diversity, it has a very strong language. But I get into that. Right now, that's not the issue. But anyhow, the point is, we have had a year and a half. Those are the things that we need to consider. You know, Dave Adelson talked about the struggle of 7 years. Ferdy talked about the struggle of 1.5 years. And basically, this institution that we wanted so much to exist forever and ever, not because, you know, not at the time that I'm around or you're around or you're around, but it should be able to continue. And it should be able to continue in a sense that it addresses the issues of our children as far as, you know, their needs in this society. So for that, we need to look at all the different issues. It's been 15 months. The institution does not have that much money. It's at the verge of bankruptcy. There has been a lot of infiltration from very, very many sides, and we are actually breaking into pieces. Do we want that to happen? That's one issue for me, which is very important, because I feel like, you know, continuation of Pacifica is more important than one item in the bylaws and another item in the bylaws. As far as, that's why, you know, that's where I come to the issues that Harrison is raising, that John is raising, that you are raising, because I think a lot of these questions are answered in the bylaws, but they're not good, they're not perfect, they need to be changed, but the changes should happen after we have a set of bylaws and we can move on. Yeah, that I feel like we should move on. As far as the issue of diversity is concerned, I think the legal issue is important. I think Plan A raises issues that are not only have problems with legality, they have problems as far as the way they want to determine the demographic. And I tell you why. Because as a person of South from South and West Asia, and I'm not the only one here, there's a huge community of South and West Asians, you know, that listen to, you know, if you just listen to Radio Intifada when we leave open phones, you can hear the number of people that call in, and it's large, it's not small. According to the demographic, we are totally eliminated. We are not counted. We are not part of the demographic of the U.S. Census. Now, Plan A wants to empower a committee called Committee of Inclusion. And this Committee of Inclusion, thank you, Plan A wants to empower this Committee of Inclusion in a sense, and that's why I think it's really flawed, give it enough power to determine who are the others, how should their category be. And I've read it. In the writing it says, what it says that we are going to go to the universities, institutions. There's no place that has defined us as a group in this community. We're not defined. And I'm saying, I'm using this as an example of a major flaw in Plan A, the way it's going about defining what diversity is. Now, in my country, after they had this revolution, there's elections. You know, that's the way I like to address, because I got my time, right?
Iran.
Iran, yeah. There is a council of higher clergy people who would decide after the election if it was right, if it was within the rule. But the way they're empowering this, thank you, this committee, it's going to beef, right, on me? Right, it's going to beef, so I would know. Thanks. The way they're powering this Committee of Inclusion in Plan A, to me, reminds me of that council in Iran that is so empowered, because they say people there can think better. And Plan A is based on distrust of the electorate because they believe, and I think somebody, it was Raphael who said, what if the electorate does not select the right person, elect the right person? If we want to play democracy, then we got to play it all the way, but we have to have the strongest, I agree with you, we need the strongest language, but the strongest language should not put in power a small group, no matter of what color, to be able to decide for the electorate. Thank you.
A quick question on process. Is everybody in the room going to speak, or are we going to go all the way around, or is it...
I guess anybody who signs up to the extent of our endurance.
Okay, I'd like to ask, I gave a background. Could I get on the stack? I'll take like 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to say something about the current issues.
Shall we just put his name up there?
I'm sorry. I would like to get on the stack also, if possible.
If you're on the stack, you have to speak for 7 minutes.
I will cede my time.
Or we have to sit here in silence.
Take questions.
Can I have a question?
How do you define what the listening audience is when you speak of 50% women, 50%?
Well, we're looking at the demographic of the singular, not necessarily the subscribers and listeners.
But we don't have any demographic studies on our listeners.
We want to do a survey.
I would think that this is something that we would like to
do. Yeah, it's a very important aspect.
And it's actually something that the lab could mandate. And I would recommend that you or your lab consider mandating that you start on that.
Because, like, tell me your name again.
Farah.
Like Farah was saying, it's one thing to say that... you would like to have 50%, let's say, Latinos or 50% Black. And in fact, if you look at who is actually listening to the station, who are your listening audience, and you can gather that. I don't know how you can, but I think that would be very important.
Can I speak to that for 30 seconds?
We should go down the list, I think.
Well, but she's asking a question.
Yeah, but then there's next person can answer.
Go ahead.
Sure.
You going to start?
Oh, wait. Are you going to answer this part of your presentation?
Yes, I'll be happy to. There are two factors in here that go into this. One is that it's not 50% women and 50% people of color. At this point, that model has been thrown out, and it's demographics. Whatever percentage is in the local signal area of Chicanos, whites, blacks, whatever. And that is what's in Plan A at this point. It's not a flat 50%. Lydia's shaking her head no.
No, and that's not what I understood, at least from our meetings, is that it's demographics of disenfranchised communities only.
Okay.
So
but it is demographic. It's not a flat 50%, and it's not just people of color and women. It's broken down a little more carefully than that. And secondly, there's the historical fact that Dave Adelson brought up, that Black programmers were banned and fired from the station. And with them went, we presume, again, we don't have the statistics, much of the Black listening audience. And so the issue in front of us, particularly with Plan A, which I am a strong supporter of, is that we need to work it from both ends. We need to make sure there's a place at the table, the governance table, for the people who would perhaps had we not banned and fired people of color, been there anyway. And at the same time, we need to adjust our programming to bring those people back. And those two things need to dovetail. But what I really wanted to speak about, and I am quite new to this process compared to most of the people in this room. I was brought on the lab back in August, so I've been here for less than a year. In that time, I've dedicated most of my time to the bylaws, because that's why I thought I was brought on, to deal with that. But I don't have a long historical perspective. But in the time I've been there, what I've seen is an effort... And it becomes clearer and clearer to me that it's a conscious effort the centralized control of Pacifica. That there has been, as the listeners ask for and demand more democracy, and by democracy I mean not just the current listener sponsor base, but the broader democracy of our actual listeners, that as we ask for an amendment process, as we ask for a bylaws convention, we're being shut down. And I thought at first that that was just some kind of localized fear of a listener-run station. But I think we're really seeing a division between people who want to have a listener-sponsored station and people who want to have a true community-based listener-run station. And
that's,
I think,
true. It's a big difference.
It's a big difference. And if you look at all of these issues, they're all about listener control. They're all about, you know, whether it's amendments, whether it's bylaws, whether it's, what are the rest of these issues, guys?
Open meetings.
Open meetings.
Access to the books.
Top-down kicking off of LSB members. Appointed seats on the
PMA. Every one of them has to do with, here at the grassroots, we want listeners in charge. And the forces that are creating our bylaws on the PMB and sometimes elsewhere, I think have a real deep fear that people can't run a radio station. And I think that's where it's breaking down. The committees of inclusion are frankly locked in, and I understand Farah's concern about the West and South Asian populations, and I think that needs to be taken into account. They're really locked into a mathematical model of demographics. They're not picking groups out of the air and saying we need these on the lab or on the LSBs, and the new boards are called LSBs. But it would be a grassroots effort. It would be something done locally and not something mandated from on high. And all of these issues break down along those lines. And frankly, I can't support bylaws that are going to turn us back into, and there are other issues floating around besides bylaws that confirm this, by the way, other things happening, that turn us back into a centralized, top-down, over-managed organization that doesn't have the people here determining what's happening at our radio station. And that's the issue that matters to me. And that's why I have real problems with the bylaws as they come down.
We still have a minute and a half for questions if you want.
And that's why I favor moving to elections without the bylaws.
I would favor that too.
If you want to ask any questions, there's still.
I just want to thank you for putting in that context. I thought that mm-hmm. was pretty good.
That was good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it's so good, I would really like to move it down to the bottom of the list. Because I'm just going to be tempted to repeat exactly what you just said.
Well, good. If you're not going to be tempted.
Wait till later.
Well, Harrison, you could go into more detail about the individual points.
Luis has a question.
Yeah, I want to ask Leslie, if we do move towards having the elections before we settle on the bylaws, what protection can we have that the issues of the bylaws will be either included or not bypassed? Because I myself mistrust the majority of listeners of KPFK.
There are two possible election models floating around right now. One is the simple KPFA model, which is the 50% people of color, 50% women, that would get us advisory boards, but at least they would be elected. The other is to start the process by going ahead with the committees of inclusion and going right up until the close of nominations. That is shrill. Going right up until the close of nominations and putting bylaws in place between now and then. Do I trust the listeners to do the bylaws a lot more than I trust appointed boards? You know, that's the bottom line.
I meant in terms of the diversity.
In terms of diversity, a lot more than appointed boards.
I think we go to Dave.
Okay, I think I am going to take quick time on this because there are a few things that have been said. First of all, I think that there are some value judgments just expressed that are just not value judgments, and you really do need to look it over and see what you think about it. From my perspective, the claim that this is all about centralization of power, there are certainly a whole lot of impulses running around, but it ain't nothing like what was going on before that we fought all these years to fight. And as far as I can tell, there aren't any significant ways in which that can be done. I think you can flip that. And I think one of the problems in the argument over diversity is the question of who's talking about what kind of fairness. So, for example, John Trudell, who's an activist with the American Indian Movement, said, look, don't come and ask me to vote when you slaughtered my whole population and now we're less than 1% of the population. What are you trying to make me think? Right? It's ridiculous. So a majority rule system where you've predetermined the electorate, everybody recognizes that's not fair, and that's not one of the things that Luis just described and has been alluded to. The electorate is determined by who's the subscribership, and that's who's listening, and that follows what kind of program you're doing. There's another point of view that says that the committee of inclusion model is one in which I'm not even clear how they're appointed, group of people, measure a result, determine who's not included, and assign a remedy after the fact and create new seats. So there's another point of view that says that's not a fair process either, because basically it says that whoever's that committee of inclusion and whatever the politics that are in that committee of inclusion dictate the outcome. Now, KPFA was very widely bad rapped for being really notoriously bad in terms of the diversity of its audience. It was defined as being, you know, a lot of old white hippies. They've had their two elections with proportional representation and have not needed to use their diversity requirements to achieve diversity because they achieved it through proportional representation. So I think there are some people who feel that a diverse pool with proportional representation will get you where you need to be on that point. But I understand the suspicion of it. I don't see it anywhere nearly as clear-cut as, oh, it's all about centralization. For example, I heard Carl say something about the ability of the governing board to remove local station board members. That's a canard, as far as I'm concerned. Corporations Code says that a board of directors always has the remote right. It's an inalienable right of a board of directors to remove anybody in the foundation. And if you can imagine for a second what the political uproar would be if a national board tried to do that, they have to do it individual by individual. I don't believe that it's ever going to happen. And the level of scrutiny that's built into this thing at this point is immense. I also am a little bit concerned about the way the amendments go, but I haven't looked at that closely, so I can't speak intelligently on the point. There is an issue of the internal political forces right now and the same kind of jockeying for who controls what, and the mistrust issues are vast. And a lot of people are really concerned about how all of these bodies got to be these bodies and what interests they're pursuing. And that's where I think the urge towards getting elections taken care of, getting elected boards in place comes from. It's going to be imperfect no matter what it is. I'm going to be writing something in the next day or two, which I think deals with some of this. The problem has to be dealt with. I don't think the particular technical solution deals with it. The committee of inclusion model, I don't think it's good. The problem is with all the Sturm and Drang and pulling and pushing, a lot of people don't know that we'll ever get to something that people will agree on, and some people are feeling like that one group wants to shove an answer down our throat, and other people feel like these people want to stop and continue with the people who are in power right now to stay in power and delay and delay and delay. I think the issue really on the diversity front is the question of whether the electorate is diverse. And I think you can do that by putting in the bylaws a statement that say that these committees of inclusion or what have you will determine the foundation will track the diversity of its subscribership and must make concrete plans to ensure that the diversity of the subscribership, that is the electorate, matches the demographics in the signal area within a given range. So, and that if you don't, you know, then somebody can, listeners can say, hey, you guys are not doing this. Then your electorate is diverse. So with the feature of a demand for a diverse candidate pool and a demand that the programming be changed so that you have a diverse electorate, then you can get there, because quite frankly, we had a majority, the majority of the prior board was people of color, and they allowed the Los Angeles station to have no people of color in drive time. People of color are willing to market to the more attractive audience if they're so choosing. I don't know that it's an adequate proxy for what is going to be the impact on programming. So I would rather see it done the other way, a statement in bylaws that says we will track the diversity, we will make concrete plans to for the diversity of the subscribership to match that of the signal area within whatever rules are being put forth for the Committee of Inclusion, that if they fail to do that, and that's going to have to happen through programming, anybody can come to the foundation saying you're violating this feature of your bylaws, and let that electorate choose whom it wants among a guaranteed, as I understand it, listener pool. Now, the last point is that in order to get an extension from the judge, we have to show that progress is, that there's a reasonable expectation that this, that progress will be made towards final bylaws. That's the basis on which extensions are given. So whatever happens, in order to get that extension, you have to be able to show that you're in the process of reasonable progress. I'm not clear that we can demonstrate that any progress has occurred from the time that the extension has been requested to now. And if it does get put back into the court, then there are a whole bunch of uncertain things. We can talk about it later, but I don't want to use up any more of your time.
Do you consider what you just said a compromise between both sides?
No, the people who have those interests have to decide whether there is a compromise. I think it's one possible solution, but people
who
are
going to put this out quickly?
Yeah, and I meant to write it today, but I've got a lot of stuff on the plate.
All right.